Thank you, Patrick. Good afternoon. So, the beginning, this is the work that we carried out a couple of months before with the master student along with us. That's Martin, and I'm supervised by both Raghavendra and Christoph, and I have affiliated for both universities, one at York University College, but majorly funded by Gesed in Hochschule Darmstadt. So, I did not know much of the audience, so just as a customary, I usually take out one or two slides to introduce Biometrics Lab to the audience here. I think many of you are from Biometrics Lab, but for people that are not from Biometrics Lab, it's a good introduction. Back in 2011, it was established, and it is one of the active focus points of GUC. Apart from that, it has quite unique combination of faculty ranging from different countries and different nationalities. We run a couple of projects for European Union apart from the academic projects or the research projects that we are involved with. Just a snapshot of all the faculty members in here. Some of them are adjunct, some of them are full-time faculty, and there are the list of the PhD students, and you can see two of the graduated PhD students, out of which one is already working at HIG. Some other things that we usually involve with, we also involve with the standardization activities and actively participate in the community-oriented conferences by supporting them and hosting them also. Some more information on the HIG's NBL activity is that we are hosting two of these workshops. For those of you who do not know about this, we are hosting one of the annual workshops, that's in 2015 on March 2nd, and then we also have one international workshop on biometrics and forensics. Those of you who did not register, you can just visit the website there and register it. For the faculty and the students at HIG, the registration is free for both the events. And now something about me, it's that I'm a software engineer by profession. I'm holding a major in electronics and communication engineering back in 2007. Then I started working with a couple of companies in India as a software and research development engineer. And then I came to master CIMET as a Erasmus Mundus student here. As Patrick mentioned before, I was part of the Color Lab. I was working there. And then I started collaborating for my thesis work with the Biometrics Lab, and that's how I ended up working for the Biometrics Lab. So here is something. What's the motivation behind this work? Some of the trivial motivation is that personal devices are becoming more and more personal. After you came across the news of celebrity leaks of many sensitive data, it has become more important to protect the private information more securely than ever before. Then again, to secure that, the traditional methods, they always use passwords. What's wrong with the passwords is that each digit of the password that you use gives only four bits of entropy. That's approximately, if you use a four-digit password, that's 13 bits of entropy that you can end up with. Although there is an argument that entropy is not related to biometrics anymore, but it's still predominantly used factor to determine the strength of the password. And then what is the other plausible solution is that we could employ biometric characteristics, and these biometric characteristics include various kind of modalities. One is the fingerprint, which has 84 bits of entropy, and then we have iris, that gives very high number of entropy, that's 249 bits. Further there is also face, that's 56 bits, but then again, each of them has its own advantages and disadvantages, which we would discuss as we go along. For those people out there, there is a well-known secret that this is the generation of selfies. And when you're talking about the security for the new generation, we are talking about things that they actually would like to do and that they enjoy. And taking selfies is one among them. So why not use this and combine it for the security? Then when we talk about selfies, then why shouldn't we use the entire face? The problem with using the entire face is that when you use the entire face, the iris information is typically very low resolution in the employed biometric sensors. In the other case, when you use just the iris, then you have the entire face not available. So two of the things that come across here. And there is another situation where you have the face information that's completely not available for the biometric purpose. One, the variation of the face, as you can see in here, the shadow and the illumination plays a major role, and apart from that also there is this pose and illumination variation that makes it difficult for the face recognition systems to capture the complete information. Apart from all these things, there is another problem that's well known, and it's the problem of the expressions. Every time you give an expression, there is this drastic change in the face, the shape it is, and then you have the accuracy that decreasing all the time. So what we propose is a simple architecture. That's we are not the first people to claim this architecture. We are just using this architecture for us in a specific manner. The architecture is quite simple, that we take the image of the eye region, that's periocular region. That's, for those of you who are not familiar with the term periocular, it's the region around the eye. So that includes both the eyebrows and the shape of the eyes, and then the edges of that formed by the eyelids. So we take the eye region, and then we extract some features, and then match it against the gallery, the reference probe that we have in the database, and then say if the score is lesser than certain value, we say it's accepted or not, and then we proceed with the next steps. So this is the existing pipeline that we have already used in our system. But what comes unique is that the way we use this entire architecture in here. So when I spoke about the smartphone based authentication system, it has to be useful in a regular day-to-day life, so which means that there should be a couple of things that are in place, and they play a vital role in each of the steps. So in that case, when you are using the smartphone for the first time, you would want to enroll yourself, and then we have the enrollment manager which takes the enrollment request, telling that, well, I am the new user, do you want to register me, and then it does enrollment, and it's stored in the reference templates. So it's the same pipeline as we extract the features from the reference image and then put it into the database here. Then we have the access unit, which takes care of the access request. Just in case somebody wants to use the phone, then they have to give the image again. So the polling unit takes care of this request and then asks for the image. Then you have the image again and taken it back. Then you have to pass it to the authentication unit. The authentication unit sends it to the comparison unit, where you have the kernel that's running all the time and gives the comparison score. So all this thing is built on a modularity structure, where you have the Android OS residing at the bottommost kernel, and then you keep on adding up the layers. So this being the most generic architecture, you could just port it to any kind of Android devices, be it a smartphone or a tablet. Things explained in detail. We have this authentication agent that consists of three units: enrollment, polling, and authentication unit as such, and then authentication kernel, which has both the database and the comparator. Sample interface for the proposed system. This is how it looks in the first scene. When you have to enroll yourself, you enroll your username, and then you give an optional password. This password is for the reason, just in case you are locked out of the system entirely, and then you still want to recover the device. It's used only in the cases of complete failure of your entire system. So the enrollment data, we have two acquisition modes. One is the self-acquisition mode and the assisted acquisition mode. The assisted acquisition mode was designed to check the trade-off between the system when somebody uses by himself or when somebody is assisting him. So in that case, we just wanted to benchmark how the system would perform. That's why we have included this. But other than that, we have self-acquisition mode, which is quite robust. Then there is the problem of multiple face in the background. That's a very common problem when you're authenticating your device in a public place. You cannot avoid the people standing behind you or standing around you and take the image. So their face is still visible in the shot that you are taken. So in that case, you need to have some kind of trivial mathematical formulations to make sure that you are the one who is getting authenticated. So for that, what we do is we kind of compute the optimal distance between the faces and try to see what's the ratio, so who is the closest one. So in this case, you can see in the second one, in the image here, even though there is a person standing behind him, there is still the ratio that comes into the play and then takes that this is the right person that has to be authenticated. So the main underlying assumption is that the person who is holding the device is the most closest one. And just also to facilitate the user interaction, we have also included the tone and the audio guided signals just to tell that the enrollment was successful or not. It's the same happens with the probe. And this is just the illustration of the acquisition. Both of them are for the self-acquisition. You can use the front camera or the back camera. The audio tone that I spoke about is specifically useful in the case where you are trying to use the back camera and then you don't know where exactly the face is, if it is located within the boundary of the capture or not. And then once we have the captured image, then we need to detect the face. So to detect the face, we use a very well-known open source HAAR cascade that's derived from the works of the Paul Weiler and Jones. And then we use OpenCV framework to make sure that it's completely open source, and we could just give it away to any other researchers that would want to work on this one. And this includes no royalty or any kind of fees towards using that. Further, once we have the face image, we try to extract the features. These features have to be quite unique. So to do this, we use two well-known existing features, that is SIFT and the SURF. For the SIFT, it is nothing but scale invariant feature transform, where you take each of the image and take the differences in the scale and then compute the whole features and then use that as a feature. And then you also use the other version of that, which is called SURF, speeded up robust features. Similar kind of techniques is used, but it's more faster than the SIFT with the same accuracy. And these have been quite well explored in the field of biometrics, especially in the field of perioclear biometrics. So we have used them at the baseline. Further to that, we have used our own proposed method using binary statistical image features. So this was the work that we did a year before, and we used it on the visible spectrum perioclear recognition. And now we try to employ it for the work that we did in this work. So you can see the features that are quite unique here in the perioclear region. This is the perioclear region, sample one, and then we use the SIFT features, and then further the SURF features. If you see them, they both concentrate more on the edges that are predominant on the eyebrows and the wrinkles behind below the eyebrows, and the texture is quite uniquely captured there. And here is the BSI features. It's more like a texture extraction feature, unlike the key point description features. Something more about the binary statistical features. This is a unsupervised learning method. When I say unsupervised learning methods, we do not have any kind of crafted filters, such as derivative filters or Sobel or canny edge filters. We do not craft them. We learn it by using the natural image statistics. So what we do is we use 13 of these images, and from these 13 of the images, we take 500,000 image patches, each of size 16 by 16 pixels, and each of these pixel is used to learn the filters. So we pass them through the independent component analysis and learn the entire filters. So this filters is made from the natural image statistics that can capture the complete the all range of variations in any kind of images. Once we have these filters, we convolve them using the to obtain the linear responses. That's the SI. You can see that the H is the filter and I is the image. So we convolve them and then sum the entire response with different scales. And after that, we binarize them using a certain condition, if it's more than certain threshold or less than certain threshold. And the threshold we have used is zero. So here is some sample features, and each of them are from different scale size filters. So the first one is approximately the response from 19 by 19 pixels filter, and the second one is 13 by 13 pixel filter, and the third one is the 17 by 17 pixel filter. So you can see that each scale space that or each dimension of the filter of the patch size gives different responses, and they can be used quite uniquely. And once we have these features obtained, we use two different kind of comparison schemes, just because the nature of the features are quite different, and as is mentioned before, sift and surf, they kind of employ key point descriptions. So we use fast approximate nearest neighbors, that is FLAN, to match the scores between two features. And the second one, in the second case, since it is texture features and it's more like binary, we use histogram comparison with Bhattacharya distance. Further, to make sure that the concept that we actually conceived works, we have employed some hardware to test it out. We have used Samsung Galaxy S5, that's with 16 megapixel camera on the back side and 2 megapixel camera on the front side. That's the latest smartphone that we had at that point of time when we started this work. And then we used Samsung Galaxy Note 10.1 to make sure that it also works on the tablet platforms, as tablets are also becoming more and more personal devices, replacing almost playing the same role as smartphones. Also, to study the other kind of brands, we also used Asus Nexus 7. You could see here in the case of the Samsung S5, the resolution is quite high. That's 16 megapixel, as good as any DSLR cameras. But in the case of the tablets, we have very low resolution. That's 5 megapixel, and in the case of front camera, it's much lesser, 2 megapixel and 1.9 megapixel. To validate this experimentally, we have constructed a new database that consists of 32 subjects, and for each subject we have taken the reference and the probe images. The reference images are 5, that's taken in one go, that's without much of the differences in single session. And then we take the probe images that amount to 10, and these were taken over the period of 10 days. For some of them it was in different instances of time, for some of them it was different instances of day. So meaning that we had some amount of variation in the data in terms of illumination and the shadows. So this resulted in total number of 2880 periocular images for each device and 17280 images in the complete database, meaning that you had 2880 times 6 different sets. And we have reported the entire errors or the accuracy in terms of genuine match rate at a given false match rate. Why this becomes more important rather than the conventional equal error rate is that equal error rate can be still lower, but the performance can be still bad, which means lower the ER doesn't always guarantee that you have the best performance. You can actually make sure that even with the lowest ER, there is some false match rate or false reject rate. So to avoid this and to give a fair comparison of what the scores are, we use genuine match rate, which is nothing but how many people are genuinely rejected or accepted given false match rate. And here are the results of our comparison. It's the first case of the self acquisition. You can see that the surf in all the cases, the surf is giving quite low results as compared to the other two feature extraction methods. But the BSIF, as promised in the previous work, it has consistently performed well in the case of self acquisition. That's meaning that it has a FMR of 85.69% in case of Samsung Tab. That's quite good for a regular usage. And then you can see that using the rear camera, when the resolution is quite higher, you have the rate at 89.38. To illustrate it more graphically, you can see that the accuracy is quite low when it comes to the features of sift and surf. They go drastically low at the false match rate of 10^-2. That means that one in 1,000 persons getting falsely accepted. It's the BSIF performs quite well. The same happens with the Samsung S5 camera, with the rear camera, which has higher resolution. The accuracy is quite higher here. And in the case of Samsung Galaxy, you can see again the same with the self-acquisition in the rear camera. And with the Asus Nexus, although the accuracy is not as good as that, but you can still make sure that it's somewhere less than 90%, very close to what we can have. But the interesting thing is that with the rear camera and the Asus Nexus, that you have the accuracy is approximately up 95%. That's because of the device itself. You know, when the device is quite handy and you can make sure that you are actually seeing what you are imaging, then you get good accuracy because the user is completely aware of what he is giving in the picture. And the placement of camera plays a very crucial role in these cases. Again, in the same case of another results for the self acquisition, we have with the rear camera, we have quite higher accuracy. That's 91%, 90% and 89%. So which means that it actually proves that the proposed system can be used in a day-to-day authentication systems. At FMR, that's the genuine match rate at particular FMR. At FMR of 0.01%, and then, right. And again, more graphically illustrating, the key thing here is that we were more interested to see that BSIF performs quite well in all the scenarios, and we were worried when the trend was not the same in this kind of the case in the middle, where Samsung S5 camera was used in the self-acquisition mode in the rear camera. Although the accuracy dipped in case of BSIF, but when you go to the more lower parts, that FMR of 0.01%, BSIF still overthrows the other two performances of SIFT and SURF. So this being the results, here is a small demonstration of how the exact system works. This is how the sample user enrolls himself and gives a password just to recover the system when it fails. And you can actually choose if you want to keep that, or if the quality is not good for yourself, then you can just discard it. So when you have the successful enrollment, it does say that it is successful. And once you have that, you have the test user verifying himself against the system. In this case, we were quite lucky. The first instance got accepted. So some of the conclusions is that we have proposed a new system that's not very unique. Well, unique in terms of the usage, but it's not the first idea that we proposed. It has been existing for a while, and we tried to import it to the practical systems, and it works. And the best result of 89.38% at the rate of 0.01, the FMR of 0.01% indicates that it can be used for the practical purposes. But still, there is an argument that it's not 100% secure, but it's quite good that 1 in 1,000 attempts will be rejected. The genuine match score of 80% is commonly observed for all the scenarios, meaning that it can be used in a practical day-to-day life. And then the research would be over if that was the end of the story, but that's not the complete story. We have the other part of the story that's untold. This is a successful scenario. fails. So the next set of the work that we are trying to do now is to investigate why these scenarios appear, why do they actually fail. And the other part is that there is the new whole stream that is researching about the presentation attack detection, that meaning that if I have a picture of you from the Facebook or from other social networking sites that I can download and then to show it to the system, it would still be able to recognize the person as it is. And this is the new challenge. That's the new way of attacking the access control systems. And now we have a new set of algorithms that are doing good, but experimentally not validated yet. So we are in the process of collecting the database to make sure that these kind of scenarios are tackled completely well, and the presentation attack detection is handled well. So, and I would like to thank the volunteer crew who actually participated in this experiment to make this study, and also Morpho who funded me for this work. I would like to invite any questions and discussions from now on. This one? This one? This one? Right, so that's the second part of the study we are doing right now. We are extending the database so we know that what are the factors that actually influence in these cases. And this being one-to-one scenario, it's unlike one-to-many, it's one-to-one scenario, and we can only get limited set of experiments on this one. To bring it to the larger scale, yes, there are a lot of factors that are affecting in these scenarios. Just for instance, the same user who got enrolled was rejected. He was successful in the first attempt, and just a change of bit of illumination, he was rejected. So we have a new system in place which has a lot of quality metrics in it before enrolling the image, and it mitigates those parameters that are influencing the image quality now, and to make sure that the comparison is quite good. But then again, we are still in the process of collecting the database. We have, I think, 45 new people apart from this database, so we are approaching close to 100 people now. Right. Well, to answer to that very specific question, when we talk about the practical system, we don't draw these kind of graphs, meaning that we measure the number of instances that you were successfully able to log in versus the number of attempts that you could not log in. So, but that gives one-to-one performance, and we cannot measure the whole system performance. That's why we have this graph, which takes all the users in place and measures the performance of them, one versus many. In that cases, when we actually measured one versus one, in that cases we had people who had 100% success in all the instances, and there were people who had a lot of difficulty, especially with people from African ethnicities or people from Indian continent, subcontinent, where the skin is usually dark. And in that case, what happens is that the reflection that goes out is kind of too bright, and you cannot extract the features. So the new work that we are doing is try to illuminate the subject by using the external lights, either by the flash of the camera, so that this reflection back is getting lesser and lesser. So we do agree that it's not 100% secure or 100% best, but we are trying to make it better by using other parameters. So that's the thing, that this is the system, this is the performance of the entire system. When I talk about 32 subjects, 17,280 images, this is the whole performance. But when I talk about one-to-one, then we have a different set of metrics. We did not disclose that one in here because that's very trivial, because some of them are 100%, and if I plot the graph for 32 people, the graph would occupy the entire page. This is the dead curve that we are talking about. As I mentioned before, since EER doesn't actually guarantee the best performance of the systems, the lower EER can actually be, I don't know if I have. Yes, it's in the logarithm scale because we have to go to 10 to the power of minus 2. So as I mentioned before, and just to illustrate here, we have something like this. FAR versus FRR. And then we go this way, and this is the ER. But then we have some systems where it is like this. Like this. So the ER is much lower here. But this does not indicate the system is best. So that's how the new ISO metrics insists us, at least the industry insists us, to do this one. Yeah. Yes. Right, the failure to capture is when you say that it's before the system. We do not talk about the sensors. We assume that the sensors are working best. So we do not. Right. Yeah, in. Right, in that case, you do not get the image, and then you say discard. Even if you get an image, you discard it. We did not actually measure the failure to capture rate, yes. But we should have. It's all based on the people who market that. For instance, the company that's funding me, Morpho, they came up with this fingerprint idea 10 years before, back in 2002. Say that's what's called Sejam Security at that point of time, if I'm right. Yeah. So those came up with the same idea of using fingerprint, but people did not accept. And then now Apple comes with all flashy marketing stuff, and they accept it. So you never know what people prefer and what people do not prefer. The company that is funding me, they are looking at this aspect, but nothing is concrete yet. Yes, Sajam in France. Yeah. Now it's Morpho. Sajam does not exist anymore. This one? Yes, we go with. We have multiple measures here. So each of them we measure at. And then the lowest one is 0.01%. At 0.01, the problem with going further down is that we don't have so many subjects to give another performance. So assuming that at 0.01%, what would be the practical accuracy of the system? In 10,000, it's in log scale. So yeah, it's 10,000. So I said it 1,000. Sorry. Thank you.